your toes. Your legs open, them never grow. Something like them other. Bunny papa like so many roads. That's why it hurt me hard to see a bunny corner of hoes. Them a $2 bills for the car you goes. You wonder why no one's there to sing your rose. I guess it's just how it goes. Living your life like your last girl, I suppose. The way you're moving, I go get you nowhere. Yeah, yeah. But tomorrow's another day. Yeah, tomorrow's another day. Where you going, I'll go take you nowhere. Yeah, yeah. So I just want you to be prepared.
Go now, or Gun Master Gina will shoot you right between the eyes. I don't think he won't. I'm giving you 5 seconds.
You know, they call me the Lord of War. But perhaps it is you. It's not Lord of War. It's Warlord. Thank you, but I prefer it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Hey yo, I leave your body more than swollen with the sort of omens. Fuck around and they gon' find you face down in some water floating. I leave you choking on the poison and I got the potion. Leave you soaking in blood and mud with your wounds open. You know the kid got him, nigga, I'm a big problem. Got your rib rocking out of place when the sick popping. But we don't do body shots, just your wig dropping. Hot bitches only getting dipped, we ain't lip locking. So call me old man winner, I'm a deep sinner. Street nigga, never coming home to a cheap dinner. I leave them niggas shouting my name out in the rain and have them covered in shit that's found in your veins. Actually, it's Gangeezy. I'm glad to be your majesty. Tickling the nerve in your cavity with my cavalry. The tragedy had to be coming from my insanity. I get a salary for throwing babies off the balcony. My name's all over your projects and record crates. With guns like guillotines, nigga, my shit decapitate. You meet your fate with slugs so hot your blood evaporate. We take cake, there's no use hiding, we break gates. My niggas mash tracks, blast gas, and smash cats. The last laugh is mine, my nigga, yo, we fat stack. My name ring, you ain't the same thing, you class at. We crash bats to the side of your head and slash rats. I make weight disappear like fat niggas on a diet. Cause riots with burners till your face, son, I fry it. Then I try it with some hot sauce and let my Glock off. Your block's off, trying to talk and get your tongue chopped off. We bang on any level, no pop rock, it's heavy metal. On your corners where I steady pedal, pushing many pebbles, hanging niggas by their rosary, son. There's no approaching me, my venom's of the utmost potency. You niggas ready for this? Scarborough shit, nigga. Shout out to all my region niggas and my West End niggas. Niggas everywhere showing love. You hating niggas need to do something when you see us instead of writing all that bullshit on the motherfucking internet. Pussies. You know what I'm saying? We be on that friendly shit cause niggas be on that friendly shit. You know what I'm saying? If you love hip hop, this is for you. You know what I'm saying? Sit back, shut the fuck up. Light up a blunt. Get yourself a juice. Enjoy yourself. You know what I'm saying? Deep waters, baby. Genghis Khan, aka Camouflage.
Oh. John McMurtry is professor of philosophy at the University of Guelph, Ontario. He is author of over 150 books and journals. In recent years, his work has focused on the underlying value structure of economic theory and its consequences for global, civil, and environmental life organization. His analysis of the meaning and impact of the 9/11 events and their aftermath is informed by this perspective. In response to the extreme pressure of forcing reality to conform to manufactured delusions, the group and its members become increasingly submerged within a preconscious field of hysteria, denials, and projections. In the case of 9/11 and the 9/11 wars, the shadow subject of the ruling group mind and its executive vector propelled two war criminal invasions of other societies and police state laws across the world. Their program is being played out in Iraq against heroic resistance, while elsewhere in the empire, the regulating group mind demands complicity with its fundamental assumptions that 9/11 was an attack from the outside and that the earth and its creatures are not sacred. Why the facts of 9/11 must be suppressed was a presentation at the International Citizens Inquiry into 9/11 on May 30th, 2004 in Toronto, Canada. Dr. John McMurtry.
Thank you very much. The subtitle is Understanding the Ruling Group Mind Behind the War Without End. I think that we've ultimately got an instituted cognitive structure here that selects for not only 9/11, but what I will later call the 9/11 wars. And hence I will explain it, beginning with the first section, Whose Reign of Terror? A quotation begins that, "The system works." Donald Rumsfeld. Civilized Americans were outraged at the torture of Iraqi prisoners by U.S. occupying forces when they found out about it. But not what started it all, the illegal war of aggression by the U.S. invasion of Iraq last year, the supreme crime under international law. Although it is reassuring that the corporate media finally broadcasts crimes against humanity instead of ignoring them, a crucial question arose in the face of the public relations onslaught by the Commander-in-Chief White House to spark American war fever again. Would the group mind slogans of the free world versus the terrorists fool the public once more? America at war had always worked before. At the height of this damage to America's image, note the focus of concern, the Patriot card was played again and again around the clock. That the Red Cross had reported that 70 to 90% of the torture victims were picked up at random and tortured for nothing they did not diminish cries for the terrorists' blood. That the official Taguba report was not permitted to question anyone above a part-time Reserve Army woman officer who was kept out of the interrogation room by U.S. Defense Intelligence did not register as evidence of top-down control. That the far worse crimes of continuously maiming and killing defenseless Iraqi women and children by U.S. and Allied bombing were not connected indicated that the murderous blind eye was still closed. The ruling group mind of America was only concerned about America's image abroad. Throughout, the deep pattern was overlooked, which tells all, that this U.S. regime obeys no law if it protects the life of people outside it. The examples are self-defining at every level. Sabotage laws of the community of nations from the Kyoto Protocol through the rights of children and the Landmines Treaty to trashing of nuclear bomb bans, covenants for economic sovereignty, and against racism and atmosphere destruction. Wherever one looks across the world's fields of life need, the U.S. presidential line of command constitutes itself as above the law, including the International Criminal Court itself, which it applies against others with righteous fury. Denial of any charge is the first response, and then attack on any who speak up. The Bush Jr. regime is a pure type of a long pattern of criminal lawlessness whose wheel within wheels of murderous operations is the seldom discussed U.S. defense intelligence, far more powerful than the CIA. The barbaric tortures in Iraq, which caused an international uproar in May 2004, had been internally and externally documented for the Pentagon since the previous year, but were ignored at the top until one thing changed. The pictures, the one thing the media public can understand, were published by the mainstream media and made plausible denial no longer possible. There are no pictures of the 9/11 setup. Throughout, one rule remained intact. No one called the president or his directors liars. The latest big lie continued to be lost, as always, in disconnected pieces. In the background, 9/11 justified any violation of international and constitutional law as essential to the war on terrorism. The same justification used by the corporation-friendly Third Reich to invade other countries at will. Behind one corporate state was the precipitating Reichstag fire to declare war on all who stood in the way. Behind the successor military war state was 9/11. Both were based on transnational corporations working both sides. The 9/11 baseline to justify war on whomever one wanted, far more clearly than the Reichstag fire, was looked for long before the event. The Bush Jr. planners had already published the Linchpin Proclamation, Project for a New American Century, a full year before 9/11 in September 2000, a public planning document in which the desired, quote, process of transformation for the U.S.'s world mission of, quote, full-spectrum dominance was made overtly contingent on, quote, some catastrophic and catalyzing event, like a new Pearl Harbor, unquote. If the process of global military dominance was not to be, quote, a long one, unquote. It should have come as no surprise then that the wish by the men positioned to enable 9/11 was granted, with formerly financed allies executing the long announced attack on the World Trade Center. One former agent, Omar Abdel Rahman, having masterminded the first attack in 1993, financed by the U.S. in past times, and another, Osama bin Laden, the second in 2001. Understanding the 9/11 wars. Quote, this is from Brzezinski. It's a quote from 1997. So we've had a number of warnings before it happened, including from the regime itself. The United States needs unhindered financial and economic access to Central Asia's natural resources, especially the enormous economic prize of the natural oil and gas located in the region. But it will be difficult to fashion a consensus on foreign policy issues except in the circumstances of a truly massive and widely perceived external direct threat. Unquote. The deepest mystery of 9/11 itself is why the facts contradicting the official story have been silenced in public and media discussion, with even left websites refusing to engage the meaning. I had a debate with Michael Albert, for example, on ZNet, and he just avoided it continuously, the whole issue. The taboo against knowing the facts is here encoded into the identity structure itself. Even the plain fact that there was an unprecedented delay on 9/11 of standard plane intercept routines for over 70 minutes, normally 10 minutes long, until all the target buildings had been hit, still remains publicly unspeakable years later. No one denies the fact. But it is, quote, conspiracy theory to mention it. This is a dead silence operation of the ruling group mind that locks out all thought and evidence which do not fit its baseline presuppositions. Given the known pre-11 9/11 search by U.S. geostrategic planning for a publicly saleable reason to invade Central Asia and Iraq, as the Brzezinski four quote in the Project for the New American Century revealed to us, why do the media, citizens, and other governments continue to disconnect 9/11's strange occurrence from what it provided the ideal pretext for? Militarily imposed new control and access over Iraqi and Central Asian oil. Specifically, its supply and its sale and its access across the world's richest oil reserve. We knew of these aims before they were made fact. Why then, when these very major invasions then occurred one on top of the other after 9/11, the sole context within which they could have been sold as defensive, does even dominant left analysis refuse to connect the dots? In the U.S. itself, almost no one, including the heroic Noam Chomsky, engages the question. Even the recent most developed factual analysis among almost none features an exonerating title, the new Pearl Harbor. Even after years of known lying about Iraq by the Bush administration, why do the media and foreign affairs respondents still continue to block out all evidence substantiating the hypothesis of a constructed 9/11 attack? For obvious example, the anonymously blocked FBI investigations before 9/11, the ignored intelligence warnings from many foreign state agencies, and the immediately prior visit of the Pakistani intelligence ISI paymaster of one of the lead hijackers. Why are even the basics of physical science ignored in understanding the attack? The building collapses whose velocity of fall from plane impacts alone contradicts the laws of gravitation and engineering physics. Again, there is no counter evidence or argument. There is just disconnection from and between the facts across the left-right spectrum. Now, given the Bush administration's endless stalling, blocking, and attack dog treatment of those chafing at top level in action before 9/11, including the FBI Director of Anti-Terrorism, John O'Neill, who died in the attack, and later the Bush administration's own official chief advisor on counterterrorism, Richard Clark, what more evidence is required for the wall of the unthinkable to be moved? How can the long-prepared plans for war crime invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, which 9/11 alone justified to the public, not be connected across the DOS by still-thinking people?
It may not mean nothing to y'all, but understand nothing was done for me, so I don't plan on stopping at all. I want this shit forever, man, ever, man, ever, man. I'm shutting shit down in the mall. Telling every girl she the one for me, and I ain't even planning to call. I want this shit forever, mine, ever, mine, ever, mine, ever.
Good morning, CKLN listeners. It is the 30th day of March, 2010. You are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening here on Tuesday. As your host, BK, aka Black Krishna, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, I do try and break down the New World Order from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and CKLN and Rogers Keelbox 947. The shows can be streamed at archive.org or radio, the number 4all.net. Check blackkrishna.blogspot.com for more of my work, my writings, and where I post these links. Also married to my MySpace, my Facebook, and Hip Hop Canada as well, where I definitely trying to shout out to guys like Camouflage, a.k.a. Genghis Khan, whose Skardog Millionaire started off the show today. What's going on? So here in Canada, we can realize what people like Professor John McMurtry said 6 years ago at the second International Citizens Inquiry into 9/11. The first one was held in San Francisco shortly before. And in the summer of 2004 at University of Toronto, 50 or so researchers from around the world gathered together to share the copious amounts of evidence of questions surrounding the official story of the 9/11 attacks. Again, 6 years ago, Antonio Zervizias actually wrote a great article for The Star about it called Poking Holes in the Official Story of 9/11. Written in May 2004, the original has been Orwellized by The Star's online service, but you can find copies at Common Dreams. And I myself posted a PDF copy of the same article reprinted by CommonDreams.org at TorontoTrueSeekers.com. So you can certainly download that and see what Canadian mindsets were 6 years ago with respect to 9/11. And as Mr. McMurtry, professor at Guelph University, who I've also interviewed for a couple hours once, and just a brilliant man, professor of philosophy, you know, as he posits, there is a ruling group mind construct out there that will tell us, you know, how to think, how to behave, and so on. And we have to be aware of that so that we can counter that in our daily lives and understand what the goals of that ruling group mind are. Number of things to go through today, but did want to play a couple of clips here because I think that there's a couple of important things said by people that are, well, important or certainly should be. And that's what I try and do here on CKLN 88.1 FM here at Ryerson University in Toronto, Canada. As a community radio station host, I try and give people a little light who maybe don't get it at times from the rest of the mass media. Because if 6 years ago, polls showed 66% of Canadians questioned the official story of 9/11, Then 6 years later, with all the crimes of the Bush administration being continued by the Obama Bush administration, Obama Bush 3, you know, we should be up around 70, 80, 90%. Who even knows how many people suspect 9/11 was an inside or is an inside job, was an inside job, and so on. And I'll tell you this much. We were out on September 11th last year, my colleagues and I, at the former Speaker's Corner at Nathan Phillips Square here at our City Hall in Toronto. And I say former because about a month ago I noticed that it had been ripped out. So just to give you some bearings, if you are facing Toronto City Hall, then on the left side, the west side, I guess the southwest corner of the square, in front of the Winston Churchill statue, there used to be a city hall, a Speaker's Corner there. That was put there by a city councilor back in, I think, the late 80s. And basically he said that he got the idea from the British Speaker's Corners that were in England, where people could just go there, and it was basically a little, you know, mini free speech platform for any citizen to get up there and to go off. And so we had one of those in Toronto, but about a month ago, it was ripped up, and I've checked back a couple of times since, and it hasn't been put back. There's just a big hole in the fence there. So go see it for yourself on Queen Street, in front of Toronto City Hall at Nathan Phillips Square. Again, if you're facing the square on the left side, to the left of the skating rink, and in front of the Winston Churchill statue. But regardless, it was there last September 11th, and some colleagues and I from TorontoTrueSeekers.com went about, there about 20-25 of us. So good showing, you know, and we had a great time, and we went to Montana's in Clubland, and we all celebrated. We celebrated. How many people know? Because even on that day itself, just walking around the streets of Toronto, you know, flexing, you know, 9/11 truth signs and shirts, and asking people randomly, you know, what do they think? Most people in Toronto know that 9/11 was an inside job, or at least was probably an inside job. And so that's the good news. However, let's get back to the ruling group mind for a sec, talked about by Professor John McMurtry, as replayed by Ms. Bonnie Faulkner on the Guns and Butter Show, Guns and Butter Radio, out of the Pacifica Network. Solid liberal news network, but you know, most of their stuff isn't nearly as hard hitting as Bonnie's work, because there is a ruling group mind out there that says, do not talk about 9/11. Do not talk about 9/11. Do not bring up the official story of 9/11. And if you don't, then of course all the crimes and all the erosion of our rights that continues as a result of the 9/11 myth will only persist, and that is a huge problem that we have to deal with maturely and intelligently, because right now we can see what's happening. They're demonizing 9/11 truthers after marginalizing them socially, after making it not cool to talk about, after having our fave television and media and radio personalities and so on dismiss questions about it as being something that's only asked by someone who's unreasonable in this culture and who doesn't want to succeed or whatever. After just you know, pounding our brains with this shut up message, they're now moving towards another stage of their attack. Militia raids, part of government effort to provoke violence and purge dissent. And there was a Michigan militia raid, which might have been part of a staged event, because that the governments often do this. False flag terrorism, the 9/11 attacks, is what governments do. They stage crises, and then they tell the people, we need to steal your rights so we can take care of this. So because we blew that up, but we told you it was someone else, they might blow it something again, and so we gotta put cameras up everywhere and search everybody and blah, blah, blah. And they'll do this. And even the underwear bomber recently that was allowed onto a plane, didn't have a passport, didn't have a ticket, was led on by a large Indian man, which the feds and police refused to identify until later it came out that there were other witnesses saying, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And the underwear bomber, who's filmed for his entire time on his flight, who supposedly smuggled a bomb in his underwear, which now has led to naked body scanners being used everywhere, where low-grade TSA and transportation safety employees can ogle us or laugh at us while we're naked. That was staged. That was clearly engineered by the government. Oklahoma City bombing, blah, blah, blah. So we have to understand, why the government would stage terror attacks. Well, we know that if there is an outside threat from a foreign power like Al-Qaeda or whatever, that the government's the only one that can protect us. I mean, you might shop at Walmart every day, but, they're not going to protect you. So governments will say, hey, that's pretty neat. We can get more power if we just scare the crap out of people and tell them we'll save them. Works every time. Joseph Goebbels, Nazi propagandist, even said back then, works every time. Communist country, democracy, doesn't matter. Just that's what you do. So the ruling group mind, which I'm going to break down in a bit more detail, gets us to not talk about things like 9/11. But what about weed? I mean, we all know how stupid it is that weed is marijuana has been criminalized. So I'm going to let Mr. Kevin Booth, who's made two award-winning films recently on the subject, explain it to you on the Alex Jones Show from the 16th of March 2010.
Kevin, good to have you on with us.
Thanks again, Alex. Thanks so much for having me on. And I'd just like to back that up. It's funny, when I think back to my days back in high school, I didn't like marijuana at all, but I smoked it anyways, just because you almost had to if you wanted to be considered cool or to be accepted into any of like the cool in groups of kids.
Let's say you're over, you're 17, you're at the cheerleader's house, and she pulls out some marijuana. She's not going to think you're cool unless you smoke it with her.
No, you absolutely have to. Now, I'm sure if you go to Amsterdam right now, there's no way that kind of behavior is taking place. I mean, the point is that kids and people are always going to do exactly what you tell them not to do. And in a way, the government knows that also. So, I mean, they're playing this thing on so many different levels. But just to back up to something else you're talking about, I truly believe that there's no way in the world they could have pulled off this New World Order agenda without the drug war. I mean, they had to dumb everybody down. They had to make this more about than just going to wars with other countries and economics. They had to like actually start fiddling with society's brain chemistry, and that's what they've done. I mean, the government is basically controlling, a huge percentage of our brain chemistry.
Well, I've had countless medical doctors and toxicologists and neurologists on Ritalin, Prozac, all those different classes of drugs. The molecules are incredibly deadly. They're toxic. I mean, the heart swelling, brain shrinking, brain damage, suicide. And then meanwhile, marijuana has a lot more attributes than some of the negatives that I've seen. And the point is, it's an excuse to put everybody. I mean, I remember back in the 60s and 70s reading stories from then. Wasn't around in the 60s, but reading about it, where people get 50 years in prison for an ounce of marijuana.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the first guy went to jail for almost life for a joint or something like that. I forget his name, but he was like the first marijuana prisoner ever. You could look it up.
Well, look, they know humans for tens of thousands of years have been taking drugs, taking mushrooms, fermenting grapes. People like to mess with their brain. We're a very addictive species, and they know that. And how do they make people slaves? Governments have always wanted slavery, but they can't just say we have slavery now without giving it an excuse. So they put out all these chemicals. The CIA introduced LSD. The CIA introduced cocaine into the illegal market. That's been admitted. Knowing people will get it, they will get addicted, and now they've got an excuse to put you in a slave camp.
Well, I think it's an interesting point, too, that you make in the film where you're talking about the thing that they can't stand about marijuana. Even with cocaine and heroin, the government and the CIA can control those things because they're very centralized. Cocaine can only be grown in only a handful of places on the entire planet, mostly in, South America, Peru, Colombia, et cetera. It has to be an exact type of condition. Poppies will grow everywhere, but the kind of poppies that I understand will grow actual heroin will only grow in very specific places. Marijuana grows everywhere. It grows in almost every country. It grows everywhere, and that's why they can't stand it. And that's why it's still Schedule 1 when things like heroin and cocaine are Schedule 2. I mean, the government actually is telling us that heroin and cocaine are safer than marijuana.
Well, let's expand on that. I saw the statistic in the Statesman 2 days ago. 100 million Americans are admitted marijuana smokers. Now, if you look at the statistics of who's tried it, they report it's over 200 million. So two-thirds of people, every cop listening out there is younger than 50. I'll bet you $1 million that they have smoked marijuana. You know, my grandfather, when he was dying of cancer and real nauseated with chemo, his buddy, the sheriff, showed up and said, "Jerry, smoke some of this. I hear it makes you be able to eat food." He said, "No, I just want to die." You know, it was about a month before he died. No, this is too painful. I'm not going to smoke that devil weed, basically. But, you know, the issue here is that the cops knew this stuff 20, 30 years ago. They know what's going on. And if you've got 86% of illegal drug users only use marijuana, where's the drug war going to go if they don't have that 86% to put in prison?
And what's interesting about it, too, is that they've tried to demonize the medical use of marijuana by saying, well, smoking anything is bad for you. Well, meanwhile, there's still ads for Camel and Rolling Stone magazine and everywhere. You know, there's still, you know, cigarettes are still legal. But the point is that more and more people are coming out and saying, you know, they want to have the health benefits of cannabinoids and the things that come from taking cannabis without getting high. Most people, you know, in the medical marijuana movement don't really want to walk around getting high. It's really not about getting high. It's about enjoying the health benefits from this plant. And now they're discovering new ways of ingesting it. This is a thing called CDCs where you actually eat the lower water leaves off the plant every day. Put them in your salad or whatever. It has incredible, incredible health benefits with inflammation. Look it up, CDCs.
No, I mean, there's no doubt that cannabis is one of God's gifts, and it could certainly be abused. I mean, you could eat 20 heads of lettuce and bust your gut. I mean, you could drink 10 gallons of water and hurt yourself. We'll be right back with Kevin Booth. Yeah, here's the New York Times article. We always document what we claim here. March 11th, 2007. Give me a document cam shot for PrisonPlanet.tv viewers. A man sentenced to life in prison 17 years ago. Just 17 years ago. This was 20 years ago now. This is from 2007. A man sentenced to life in prison 17 years ago after smoking marijuana while on probation for his part in armed robbery is set to be free. So, smoking marijuana. But that's a more modern case, and that's for breaking parole. The bigger issue here is I've seen cases for just the marijuana 50 years in prison. Kevin Booth.
The point is that I doubt he did the robbery while he was high. And I know that's an old cliche, and there's several cliches that have to be said over and over again because they're so ridiculous, but you have to keep repeating it about the death statistics. But first of all, when the police talk about people committing violent crimes while high, most likely they're also extremely drunk at the same time and they just found some THC in their blood. And, you know, when the DEA and the Narcotics Task Force survey, they talk about the statistic about how marijuana is by far the most harmful and destructive drug out there. Well, I've figured out how they come about that number. It's real easy. If you go to any kind of like treatment center, jail or anything like that, where they've incarcerated people for crystal meth, heroin, or PCP, crack, anything like that, if you ask them to check off the boxes, what all do you do? Well, most likely they're all going to check off cigarettes, beer, and what else? Marijuana. So they use that as this common denominator to say, look, everyone who does heroin also smokes marijuana. Everyone who does crystal meth also smokes marijuana. Therefore, it's the gateway drug, and that's how they come upon that conclusion.
Well, it's a gateway drug because they make it illegal and lump it in with cocaine and heroin, so people then get into the circles that are already doing illegal things.
No, exactly, and that's what this whole dispensary thing is all about right now. Whether people think this whole medical marijuana is just a front to get high or whatever, at least it's a way of taking marijuana out of the criminal's hands.
Well, why can you or I or anybody pull in over 21 and buy a gallon of vodka and go kill ourselves with it, and that's fine. And we know alcohol kills hundreds of thousands a year, marijuana zero, but that's okay, but people shouldn't be able to go into a dispensary with a doctor's note and get marijuana.
Well, I mean, maybe that's what the government wants us to do. Maybe the government wants us to buy products that they can tax and then kill ourselves. I don't know.
I was talking to a lobbyist a few weeks ago who works at the Texas Capitol, and he was saying, oh, no, it's true. The alcohol lobby and the cigarette lobby are some of the biggest donors to keep marijuana illegal. Why is that, Kevin?
Of course, because they would lose so much. I mean, if marijuana were legal across the board, so many people would smoke pot instead of drinking beer, or smoke a little weed instead of smoking cigarettes. It's just obvious, painfully obvious.
Well, on the National Archives, you can pull up notes to George Washington's care for his toothaches, and they're telling him smoke this variety of hemp, which is the variety that has the THC. So George Washington was smoking it. I guess he deserves life in prison.
Well, and that alone should be the only reason, if some people out there who are still thinking, you know, like, oh, it makes people dumb, makes people high, needs to stay illegal. No, I mean, if the founding father did it and wrote about it, that's case closed. It's argument over. And they know that. Either that or go live somewhere else. The founding father of our country did this thing, spoke highly of it, that's the end of the argument.
He grew it. He grew the type of marijuana, not just hemp. And that's another thing. They banned in the country all the hemp that has no THC, that's better than cotton. I mean, it's something farmers can grow anywhere. The cotton lobbies lobbied to have it banned because they then had machines that could remove and strip and use it. So they said, oh, my God, let's ban this.
No, of course.
Why don't they at least legalize the hemp?
Well, because I think they feel like if they legalize hemp, then it's going to, everybody can grow marijuana. No one's going to know the difference. But also then hemp will put, you know, I think when they came out with polyester, I think that was another big lobby against it. You know, the big polyester movement, you know, that was maybe a little bit before your time. But when I was growing up, all of a sudden, everyone wanted to wear polyester clothing. That was the thing. And supposedly that had a lot to do with wanting to keep hemp out of the market.
You know, there is such a thing as insidious influence. Does it involve bribery? And does it involve some sort of psychological domination of individuals?
But what does the New World Order mean for countries like ours?
A New World Order.
No world order that elevates one nation or group of people over another will succeed.
It's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a New World Order.
So it's going to be an inner ruling elite and then everyone else. And I got news for you. You're everyone else.
The whole concept of New World Order is something else. It really says that the state is God.
You take the roots of that organization and you find out that they created in all of the British dependencies what they call round table groups. Then around those little round table groups, they created front groups.
We're getting to two levels of government here. One level of government where we have checks and balances, and a higher level of COG government where the constitutional authorities are not allowed to go.
Back then, it wasn't politically wise to be aligned with what his party's right wing considered a shadow world government.
The New World Order really is a tool for addressing a new world of possibilities.
This is the third leg of the New World Order.
That's why it's important. The people running this country are determined to destroy it.
Invisible Empire, a New World Order defined. Pre-order it on DVD now. It ships out on or before April 15th. Those that order now will get it first. Infowars.com, and you put money into our treasury to run the radio show, the news websites, all the guests, the congressional and state candidates we support here. This is a platform, a firebase, and resistance against the enemy. And make no mistake, you've got to realize that this isn't rhetoric when we talk about the type of criminals running our government. Stalin killed 40 million. Mao killed over 60 million. Hitler, tens of millions. Governments are run by abusive scum when they go bad. And they normally go bad.
We're back, CKLN listeners. That was, again, Mr. Kevin Booth, filmmaker behind American Drug War and How Weed Won the West on the Alex Jones Radio Show. from the 16th of March, 2010. I'll post links to these at archive.org and at radioforall.net and on my blog, blackcreation.blogspot.com. So there's basically a thesis developing here. All right, so we know more than we say. And there's a lot of proof of that. And I'll give you an example. There's a ton of stuff going on in the United States right now. A quick look at Infowars.com reveals one of the things that just recently happened is that a congressman in Idaho proposed a bill, which was eventually passed 53-8 by their state legislature, saying that they won't use naked body scanners unless the TSA, the U.S. Transportation Safety Authority, can prove that they're safe. And this is key. This is important here. We don't have anything like that pending in Canada, and there isn't much of a push from the citizens, which is the key problem. Canadians are known as being very, very nice, but we're also pretty damn smug about how great our country is and how good we have it. And we've been told for decade after decade that the UN says we're the best country in the world. Once you learn how evil the UN is, folks, you may want to question that designation. Going along with what they say and getting their accolades may not be taking us to where we want to go. And getting back to 9/11 for a second, there was some bombings recently in Moscow, killed about 40 people at a train station there. Read some articles about that yesterday, and again, we in a world that's run by the New World Order, as the promo for the film Invisible Empire by Jason Burmes, one of the masterminds behind Loose Change, the Loose Change films, Loose Change Second Edition and Final Cut primarily. His new film, Invisible Empire, breaks down the New World Order. In a world run by the New World Order, nothing makes sense unless you factor them in. Race relations don't make sense. Gender relations don't make sense. Politics doesn't make sense. Economics doesn't make sense. You know, when you have a bunch of free market ideologues preaching, you know, offshoring of jobs and preaching offshoring of technology, basically, because if we lose our jobs, we basically lose our way of we lose our way of producing something worthwhile to sell to the rest of the world. And so you get people preaching this, you get people preaching consolidation. These people have basically been told to preach something besides, you know, the antitrust diktats that are at the core of maintaining a functioning economic system. You don't build up trust. You don't just cheer for layoffs. You don't just, you know, you realize that there are some institutional problems in the system if choice is shrinking and competition is shrinking. But hey, the head of the Rockefeller family from about 100 years ago, John D. Rockefeller, I believe, said competition is a sin. And that gets me to the communist angle on all this. One of the reasons I nickname this place Communist Canada once in a while is to provoke the reaction, well, why the hell do you call it that? And so I'll explain. Here in Communist Canada, like in other communist countries, we don't like to criticize the government or the actions of the government. In fact, we actually propagandize for the government. And we talk about what they're doing as if it's real, as if it's something that's good for us. And that's crazy because they first of all, they screw too many people in our culture with the resources they have, with the incredibly high taxes that we pay here, for them to just sort of, for us to sort of assume that they're good. They leave too many people screwed. There's stories about it in our paper. There's health care cuts and there's cuts to welfare and there's people living on the street and blah, 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 blah. And on and on and on. We can see, you know, some of this if we look. But okay, so that's one, you know, point. That's some of the shamrocks and shenanigans they're up to. The second point with respect to the communist angle is our social policing of each other on other levels. So basically, in communism, they enforce certain values as well as political opinions. And in communist Russia and in communist China, a lot of the values are anti-human, anti-family, anti-culture, anti-religion in their desire to homogenize where they lived. Now, here in Communist Canada, and you know, we are sort of part of America in many ways, in this system here. Here in Communist Canada, it's done through fashion, among other things. It's done through fashion, and this is Fashion Week. And I see here the cover of the Metro today from Tuesday, March 30th, 2010. Fashion Week, pre-loved show. A model walks the runway yesterday for the pre-loved show during Toronto Fashion Week. Renowned for creating custom looks fashioned from reclaimed vintage fabrics, pre-loved showcased a contemporary mix of schoolgirl chic. And basically what they do here with style and culture and what's cool and what's hot and are you on Twitter yet and do you have you don't have a Facebook account and what's wrong with you and whatever, is they enforce what's important. What's important for us to stress. And in this New World Order scientific dictatorship, a lot of this type of thinking is meant to make us selfish and stupid. And this is nothing against, I got a thing for this, and there is a cute model here on the cover, wearing glasses and looking all dainty and fine. No arguments with this in one sense. The problem is ignoring the New World Order. Because if you ignore the New World Order, then you take all this stuff straight. You take fashion straight. You take music straight. You take our beloved musical artists who are trying their best to make it and get put on straight. And if you take all that straight, you don't realize the construct within which they and we operate in. The New World Order essentially wants to promote these ideas, our love of our culture, so we get addicted to that culture, and so they can make us happy and poor, as I said yesterday, quoting Mr. Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. And hence the pre-loved show. Here it is. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, there would be high fashion on the cover of this. Now it's, you know, lower brow fashion. Now people are dressing a bit bummier. Now we're, you know, growing stubble. You know, stubble's in style. And it's in the damn fashion ads. And it's being worn by people on the streets. And this is all part of the giant plan to get us used to this type of lifestyle and to our lowered living standards. It says here, hurry up and wait. Toronto commute times, worst of 19 cities, says a study here. Again, cover of the Metro. Toronto is a great place to live if only you could manage to get work, says a new study by the Toronto Board of Trade. Greater Toronto's commuting times are the worst of 19 world cities surveyed. The board's second annual scorecard on prosperity, that's in quotes, shows. And I have to say, this morning, I was trying to take the streetcar here, and I got here like 5 minutes late, because I basically come from college in Dufferin across to either Young in College or Church in College, depending on my mood. And then I walk up to the station here at Ryerson University. And this morning, my streetcar just kicked us all off at Bathurst and said he was going south to King. And I don't know why at, 5:30, 5:45 in the morning, they do that. I don't see the reason. Just have a different King streetcar. Like, why are they making these turns? Why are they doing this and so on? And again, in a world where you take everything straight, it's like, what? TDC? Yeah, it's TDC. They do what they do. Nah. You know, but in a world that's run by the New World Order, you start to go, wait a minute. You know, how are they messing with us? How are they stressing with us? Why? What is the deal? What do we have to figure out here? Because it's not quite as simple as, people just do stuff. It's been famously said that nothing happens by accident in politics, and to a large extent, that's true. Nothing does happen by accident, so we do have to look for possibilities there. Does that mean we can speculate? Absolutely. Absolutely, we can speculate. Does that mean that we can speculate till we come up with reasonable questions? Sure, of course. What is going on here? Why is it that our governments are determined to balance our budgets right now while we're in a recession, when they could run crazy deficits when we weren't? I mean, why now? Why now? Why do you need to balance budget now? You know, we need the money now, especially when our commute times are the worst of 19 cities surveyed here. Carol Wilding, chief executive of the Board of Trade, called Toronto's last place ranking, quote, embarrassing. Wilding noted that Metrolinx, the regional transit authority, has drawn up a plan for Greater Toronto, but it exists mostly on paper. And the provincial budget, which delayed $4 billion in planned transit spending, didn't help. Wilding said it was, quote, it was 80% underfunded, and now with Thursday's provincial budget, it's 90% underfunded, she said. And we're supposed to eat this. You know, again, this is on the cover of the Metro. This is the main article featured. Fortunately, there's a cute girl right beside this, so it makes this terrible news that the transit's bad, and it probably won't get better, and it might even get worse with the way they're treating it. It makes it easier to take. I'll give you that much. The reports note that only 29% of Toronto area residents leave their cars at home. In Paris, 74% walk, cycle, or take transit. In Hong Kong, it's 90%. The report underscores the need for the province to get back on track with the city's Transit City Light Rail plan. And Mayor David Miller still angry with last week's budget announcements. Well, Mr. Miller, talk about the New World Order and see what they're up to. Incidentally, they, as part of Agenda 21 for Sustainable Development, want us all stacked and packed in things that look very much like condos, stacked and packed in these little boxes, just, you know, to the sky. No more owning land. No more property. The Queen does not want us owning any more property. She does not want us owning property. And that's something that we got to figure out here. Go to freedomadvocates.org for more on UN Agenda 21 for Sustainable Development. The reason they're telling us resources are scarce is because they want to steal them all, and they, meaning the New World Order, using the United Nations as their proxy. The United Nations actually has an organization here called ICLEI, ICLEI.org is their website. They're in Richmond and Spadina, and they're responsible for micromanaging local environmental initiatives throughout the world with their satellite cities. They've got 600 ICLEI cities in the United States right now, probably dozens and dozens here in Canada and others around the world that are following these dictates, that have their little sustainable agenda guidebook to herd us all into an era where we think that we have nothing because there's nothing for us to have. And if we take anything or use anything, we're greedy bastards. Again, they've been called watermelons by James Dellingpole, British journalist. That's the green communists. And this all dovetails in. So, started off the show today with, a little Scar Dog Millionaire, a little Genghis Khan, and good track. That guy's got a great rap voice, and he can certainly flow. Good street knowledge. And then kicked it into some old school knowledge from Professor John McMurtry, professor of philosophy, courtesy of the Guns and Butter Show, talking about 9/11 and the ruling group mind that keeps us from questioning that story. And it was outrageous back in the summer of 2004. In May 2004, here in Toronto, at the second International Citizens Inquiry into 9/11, back in 2004. So, played a substantial clip of Mr. McMurtry discussing that then. It's been 6 years since. The case is pretty much closed in the sense that we need to reopen it formally and officially and professionally, and not settle for another cover-up like we had last time. And we need to use our knowledge of false flag terrorism to expose potential future false flags, because if you go to Infowars.com right now, you'll see New York Security activates security plan after Moscow bombings. And there's a ton of plans in place to use in case of a false flag terror attack to essentially declare martial law. There's a bunch of agitation about false flag attacks, the recent underwear bomber guy, some shootings a plane flying into an IRS building in the United States, and so on. Bunch of evidence of inside jobbery there. There's one article I did want to get through, courtesy of CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. And this is from Alan Watts' show. So he titled his show that day from March 26, 2010. You can just go to CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com, scroll down for March 26, 2010 show, and the links below it. God forsaken, we're back to pagan, primitive and wild, consuming the child. And you go, why the hell did he say that? And he says, well, here's the article from the Seoul Times. And it has the Seoul Times all over these incredibly disgusting pictures. Chinese eat baby soup for sex. One baby policy blamed for killing babies in China. And there's a picture here. I'm looking at a picture of a human fetus, apparently. A human baby is being made into soup for sexual power in China. And it's got the Seoul Times logo blasted on the picture to make sure you don't just copy this and whatever. Or it just, this is our picture. And it says their reporter went to the places where this was made. So into the article. Some of the Chinese people are known to be eating babies, and the news circulated through the internet or via email communication is shocking the world. An email report received by the Seoul Times confirmed the news with several vivid and appalling pictures of human embryo fetuses being made into a soup for human consumption. The report went on, a town in the southern province of Guangdong, or Canton, is now on trend, taking baby herbal soup to increase overall health and stamina and the power of sexual performance in particular. The cost in China is approximately $4,000. A factory manager was interviewed and he testified it's effective because he is a frequent customer. It's a delicacy whereby expensive herbs are added to boil the baby with chicken meat for 8 hours of boiling and steaming. He pointed to his second wife next to him. She is 19 years old. The 62-year-old man testified they have sex every day. After waiting for a couple of weeks, he took this report to the restaurant when he was informed by restaurant manager that the spare rib soup, local code for baby soup, was now available. And so on and so forth. And it keeps going here. It says dead babies can also be purchased in Taiwan for $70 for being used as grilled delicacies. And there are a number of disgusting pictures of human fetuses I'm looking at right now. The last one being head of boiled human baby is about to be served at the table. And it's not a little traditional Chinese white, you know, bowl with the blue, you know, pretty designs on the side and the little, you know, fat little short spoons. Anyway, so that's the Seoul Times, and that gives you an idea of the people who run the world. Now, this is not a knock against the Chinese. When I first saw this article, I thought, oh, more demonization in China. Who knows what's going on here? but it's not necessarily that. Elites, the New World Order wants to promote sex and deviant forms of sex. And I talked yesterday about college rape, and I've talked about satanic pedophile cults running the world and the movie Eyes Wide Shut that revealed a lot of their bizarre interests and so on. And so we've got to keep an eye out for that filtering down through our culture. Now, the higher up you go in the New World Order, the more wacky, weird stuff you're into, including pedophilia and worse. And we can see the excesses some people are taking it to with things like what's going on here in China, with things like all the obsession with plastic surgery and so on. Why do the people at the top want us having so much sex? Why do they want us having so much fun? Why do they want us thinking these ways? This is something we got to figure out. So a couple of websites to check out include Infowars.com, NaturalNews.com, for great health news, trendsresearch.com for solid wealth news, and cuttingthroughthematrix.com for a great philosophical overview, a way to interpret the world for Mr. Alan Watt, A-L-A-N-W-A-T-T. I've got a shout out. But before I go and give you over to Mr. Colin Smith for your one flight up, I'm going to share a couple of local groups as well. TorontoTruthSeekers.com, going strong and growing strong, 320 plus members, and looks like we're not going to stop, kids. Looks like we're taking the city back, and we're going to let the whole country know what's going on. Definitely check them out. PressForTruth.ca, amazing journalism site. Filmmaking team of Dan Dixon, Brian Law, got some hot stuff cooking. Check out some previews there. TheFreedomLink.org and the Freedom Link Canada, networking patriot sites and patriots worldwide on these issues. ConspiracyCulture.com, the great conspiracy culture bookstore at Queen and Roncesvalles. Got to check them out. Toronto Street News is a great newspaper that talks about some of these issues. Give you some tips, health and wealth tips to get you through your day and help you avoid some of the evil New World Order goodies out there. Definitely check them out on the streets of Toronto. But I'm out of here. Mr. Colin Smith is up next with your one flight up. I'm going to leave you with Planet B. A little plea out there for you to be an individual. Think for yourself in this culture. It's worth it, and it's fun. Because instead of just explaining or complaining away like it's normal, let's figure out how to stop by figuring out what's up and what's going on and who really runs things and how we can soon. Peace out.